with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Hauck.
Alrighty. Good evening, everyone, or wherever you are in the world at this time listening to this broadcast. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, reclaiming that which has always been in you. In fact, helping you to reclaim that which you have always been and are. I'm Dr. James Hauck, and if you would like more information about me, or if you want to leave me your comments about today's show, I invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And if you would like to be part of tonight's show, or you have some comments or, you know, just some observations or so forth, or just want to share a nice story, please call in. That toll-free line is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And for those of you who are tuning in for the first time, welcome aboard. Always like first-time listeners. Just wanted to highlight the fact that these broadcasts focus on the integration of spirituality and mental health, which are actually not exclusive of each other, but rather they find this holistic integration in people's lives. There is one caveat. For this integration to result in, let's say, awareness and transformation, it has to be placed within the context of our relationships with ourselves and others and God or the divine. For this is where we live out our awareness in this world, in and through relationships. So it is my great pleasure to be with you here today. And I'll be taking your calls in the second half of the show today after the break. And I encourage you to call into the show because I would like to get your heart's feeling on today's subject. The shards of illusion. Being able to see from the soul, or being able to heal the shards of illusion. Well, how is your heart today? I hope that wherever you are, that you are safe and you are able to be at peace. Well, today being June 19th, we celebrate Juneteenth, which is a celebration of the end of slavery here in America. And interestingly, the celebration originated in Texas, where on June 19th, 1865, Union soldiers led by Major General Gordon Granger announced that all slaves were free under the Emancipation Proclamation, which had been issued more than 2 years earlier by President Lincoln. And Juneteenth was first celebrated in 1866 with prayer meetings and spirituals, and people would go out and get new clothes. And it's also known as Freedom Day. And when you think about Juneteenth, you know, absolutely, let us celebrate the end of slavery here in America. But when we talk about freedom from slavery or oppression or subjugation, there we go, I'll get it out. It, you know, it's always a very good thing, whether it is in a literal humanity sense, you know, this kind of freedom, very good thing, or in finding freedom from any and all psychological, emotional, physical, and spiritual oppression, from perceptions that keep us from living out our truths of who we are. And it takes all of us helping each other and eliminating the microaggressions that keep people marginalized based on external factors. Well, I'm sure all of you out there have heard the expression at one time or another that it takes a village to raise a child. In other words, the survival of any person extends beyond the immediate family, And so regardless of nationality or creed or race, we are more connected to one another than what we realize. And just as it takes many to contribute to the development of a generation of children, history now shows us that it also takes a village to hide scandals and abuses and atrocities. Because if there's one specific truth that is echoed from history, it's that no one person or entity acts alone. No secrets remain hidden, and the truth never stays buried. I mean, yes, there's another old saying that dead men and women and children, you know, don't tell tales, but they do. They do tell tales of how they died. Some died of natural causes, some died at the hands of others, and some people were not even considered worthy to be buried respectively. You know, but for all of these atrocities and more, it's time for us to begin telling the stories of how people who have come before us, how they lived. It's time for us to see them for who they are, and that is souls. Souls that have lived on after their hearts have stopped beating and their brain waves ceased. Souls that surround us like a great cloud of witnesses, as scripture says, or the communion of saints. Because our ancestors do speak to us constantly through the blood that runs through our veins. And yet, how do we reconcile these events with what we do today? Because this is the real effort behind healing intergenerational trauma. Because trauma has the potential to disconnect us from who we are as souls. I'm going to say that again. I don't want you to miss that. You know, intergenerational trauma and trauma itself has the potential. It's not a guarantee, but it has the potential to disconnect us from who we are as souls. And the reason for this is that unhealed emotional wounds, psychological wounds, physical wounds, and even spiritual wounds place a distorted template over our perceptions. So, for example, trauma says to us, well, this is all there is, and this is all there is to you, or this is as good as it gets. I mean, these are all lies and distortions that come from other wounded people who have yet, I believe, who have yet to embrace themselves and soul. However, once we embrace ourselves as souls, and once we fully get it, we may be astonished to see the power of our soul to not only transcend trauma and transform our wounded energy, but also we can empower others to do the same. But still, as history has shown us, that many have feared the resiliency and power of the soul and therefore tried to silence its cry. And it just never works. Well, one of the leading trauma experts in the field today, Bessel van der Kolk, notes that the human response to psychological trauma is one of the most important public health problems in the world today. I mean, traumatic events such as family and social violence, or rape or assaults, disasters, wars, accidents, predatory violence confront people with such horror and threat that it may temporarily or even permanently alter their capacity to cope, or their biological threat perception, or another way to put it, and their concept of themselves. Because traumatized individuals, and I'm not telling you anything new out there, that you frequently develop post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. It's a disorder in which the memory of the traumatic event comes to dominate the victim's consciousness and depleting their lives of meaning and pleasure. And so PTSD, we'll say it again, it's a disorder in which the memory of the traumatic events come to dominate the victim's consciousness. And that's what has to be worked through. And in another trauma studies, Chenery, back in 2011, he noted that children and adults who experience prolonged periods, you know, in terms of like months and years of chronic victimization and total control by others. They also experience the following: difficulty with emotional regulation, where they may include persistent sadness or suicidal thoughts or explosive anger or even inhibited anger. Like, how do I express it? I feel it, but I can't. They may also experience consciousness. This includes forgetting traumatic events or reliving traumatic events, or having episodes in which a person feels detached from their mental process or their body. In other words, dissociation. And they almost, you know, may have a difficulty with their self-perception, which may include helplessness or shame or guilt or, let's say, a societal imposed stigma, and a sense of being completely different from other human beings. And there also may be distorted perceptions of the perpetrator, which would include attributing total power to the perpetrator. In other words, they can do no wrong, and I'm just going to stay in this victimization, or becoming preoccupied with the relationship to the perpetrator, or preoccupied with revenge. And that starts to just ruminate and ruminate and ruminate on that. And the perception is just becomes more and more distorted. And it also, you know, prolonged trauma, you know, does affect relationships with others. Because a lot of people, you know, if it gets severe enough, they're going to, you know, isolate. Or they may have a hard time trusting others. Or they might have a repeated search for a rescuer. You know, somebody rescue me. Somebody help me. Somebody deliver me. You know, because you're stuck in that victimization. And finally, it does affect one system of meaning. In other words, this may include a loss of, you know, your faith or a sense of hopelessness or despair. Well, perhaps you've also heard the expression, hurt people, and wounded people wound people. And this is where I would say the emotional and psychological self-inflicted wounds come from. And this is what I mean by that. You know, we think that if we say something harmful or do something harmful, it's never going to come back on us. But it does. Every negative thought, every negative thing we say, every negative thing we do comes back to us, often reinforcing the wounded parts of ourselves. And so, you know, we have different ways to kind of understand this phenomena. You know, we say, well, what goes around is going to come around, or what you sow, you're going to reap. Or even, you know, karma is another way to understand that no matter how you say it, humanity lives in an echo, that whatever goes out from us is going to return to us. Just like we hear the sound of our own voice echoing back in our ears when, let's say, we're in a tunnel or a cave. So everything we think and say and do is energy. And unless we transform that energy through healing our wounds, it's going to come back to us exactly as it went out from us. And, you know, this is a phenomenon I run into time and time again, counseling clients who want to heal from their past. Everybody wants to heal from their past. And everybody wants to improve their relationships. Not everybody wants to do the work. Because it does take work to transform the negative energy, to transform the woundedness from whatever we may have experienced in our past. So whatever a person is struggling with from other relationships, more than likely, they're struggling with the same issue in themselves. Again, what negative energy is being sent out echoes back to them sooner or later. So, for example, let's say a person is filled with bitterness from a previous hurt or a betrayal. Well, unless that's healed, they're more than likely going to view everything and feel everything from a lens of bitterness or victimization. Or another example would be that a person who has experienced tremendous hurt from a broken trust in relationships, again, unless this is healed, and the energy is transformed into something healthier, we'll more than likely view everything and everyone with suspicion. And this is very difficult for people to understand the phenomena of emotional and psychological self-inflicted wounds. What goes out has first come from within. So sometimes a person might say, well, you know, I'm never going to forgive that person for, well, usually this means I will never be able to forgive myself for whatever, fill in the blank. Or they might say, well, I can never trust another person because, you know, again, this usually means I have difficulty trusting myself. Or I can't stand it when a person says this or they do this. Usually means I can't stand myself whenever I say or do this. And finally, you know, I just can't love that person because, well, typically means that I also struggle with loving myself. So how we are with others is how we are with ourselves, and vice versa. And how we see others is often how we see ourselves. Unresolved and unhealed wounds distort how we view and interact with the world. So, if you've ever seen the movie Frozen, perhaps you're aware that the movie is a variation of Hans Christian Andersen's children's story, The Snow Princess. And he wrote this back in 1845, long time ago. The lesson still goes on today. And in Andersen's story, there's an evil troll, which is the devil, okay? And he uses a very large magic mirror, like the funhouse mirrors that you go in and have, you know, some fun with in carnivals. And he uses this magic mirror to distort the appearance of everything that it reflects. In fact, the mirror itself wasn't designed to reflect the wholesomeness and the beautiful aspects of people and things, but instead, he magnified their ugly and wicked characteristics. So throughout the story, the troll becomes amused in distorting the images of everyone and everything, even to the degree that most beautiful lands looked like boiled spinach. Well, one day, this troll, with the help of his minions, he decides to carry the mirror into heaven so that he might make fools of the angels and laugh at God. However, as they are making this trip up to heaven, the mirror slips from their grasp and falls back to earth, shattering into millions and millions of little tiny shards. And these tiny shards of the mirror are then blown by the wind all over the earth, which get into people's eyes and their hearts. And as a result, people's hearts become frozen, like ice. And their eyes can only see the ugliness and evil in each other and the world in which they live. Well, ironically, our past wounds are just like those shards of distorted perceptions of who we truly are as souls, as well as what freezes our hearts from seeing the beauty and goodness in ourselves and others. And for those who are struggling with intergenerational trauma, intergenerational wounds, and who have suffered crimes against humanity, society often holds up its mirrors of misleading standards, sometimes intentionally, sometimes unintentionally. But nevertheless, the shards of illusion are intentionally designed to add, let's say, generational distortion to the eyes and hearts of the weak and wounded. And over time, it's our minds that tell us that what we perceive, albeit limited and hazy, well, if we see it, it must be true. If we hear it, it must be true, and so forth. Well, I often share with my clients, you know, just my personal philosophy of how and why I work with people the way that I do. It really comes from two deep-seated beliefs within me. The first is that I believe that people have the answers within themselves, meaning that they know the kind of life they want to live, and what brings them happiness and joy and peace and contentment, as well as what doesn't. And the second is that I believe that from the moment we are born, and then some, we have everything we need for in this life in terms of our talents and our skills, our giftedness, our graces, our personalities, our strengths, and so on and so forth. The very best of who we are. And yet, there are times when we might go through some very horrific experiences, such as being in the wrong place at the wrong time, and we suffer some traumatic experiences, or we struggle with the same mistakes and bad habits that we never properly dealt with or healed from, and or we struggle to make sense out of our issues that have been handed down through our family line. But nevertheless, these issues and the pain that they entail often keep us from living the life that we want to, as well as keeping the very best of ourselves from coming out, and the shards of illusion keeping us from seeing and understanding who we really are as a soul. And as a result, we often live our lives from a place of woundedness and pain or victimization, instead of from a place of healing and wholeness and love. Well, ironically, we often receive our deepest emotional and psychological, physical, and spiritual wounds as a result of being in relationships with one another. You know, and whether this wounding was intentional or accidental, it is what we do afterward, once we have been wounded, or that we have wounded another person ourselves, that will either reinforce those wounds or find a way to transform those wounds to be free from those burdens. And yet, to find our healing, we need to be in healthier relationships to heal from damaged emotions and wounded spirits and the lack of emotional and psychological support. So, in severe cases, trauma can be passed down genetically, you know, and eventually, if it's severe enough, it's going to attach itself to our DNA and often covertly disguise itself as harmful physical, psychological, emotional, and spiritual symptoms. So, similarly, as intergenerational trauma is passed down through society and families, that is, what we carry in our genes or how we were raised and so forth, various social systems, as we have seen throughout history, also galvanize harmful stereotypes or prejudices or injustices or emotional dependence or certain biases and so on and so on. And therefore, intergenerational trauma is not just limited to how it affects our families, but also it affects all of our relationships, from the most intimate to the mere acquaintances in our lives. And this realization of how we are wounded and what it takes to be able to transform the energy is a significant aspect of our healing relationships. It occurs when we can understand what has so wounded another person, that what has so wounded ourselves, as to allow us to continually act out of our woundedness and expect different results. Okay? Can we truly look at ourselves, or let's say we truly look at another person and understand, you know, why they do what they do, that they're acting out from this place of woundedness in them, a wound, you know, just horrific pain and suffering that they may have endured or experienced but has never healed. And so wounded people wound people. And I have to say that from personal experience, that understanding to the background of those who hurt me, it has allowed me to take the necessary steps closer to forgiving and releasing the burdens of carrying around my wounds any longer. And the same is true whenever we forgive one another. We are, in a sense, telling them that we no longer want them to carry the weight of their wounds. We want them to also be unburdened by any weight of bitterness or unforgiveness or shame or humiliation or whatever pain that they have suffered from the past that continues to influence how they think and say and act in very harmful ways. Well, as I said at the beginning, I would really love to hear your heart on these matters. So again, if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Welcome back. You are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. I'm your host, Dr. James Hout. And earlier in the show, if you're with me in the first half, I was talking about where emotional and psychological self-inflicted wounds come from. So just to reiterate again, you know, for example, we think that if we say something harmful or we do something harmful, it's never going to come back on us. But it does. You know, every negative thought we have and every negative thing that we say and every negative thing we do comes back to us, often reinforcing the wounded parts of ourselves. However, we can also say that whenever we do something wonderful or good for somebody else or love or forgive and so forth, that's going to come back as well, because every positive thought, every positive thing we say, every positive thing we do will come back to us, reinforcing not the wounded parts, but the wonderful parts of who we are. And so, if I gave, you know, three examples, you know, and just, you know, emphasizing like the negative aspects, you know, we have many ways to understand this concept that things will come back to us, you know, because we have sayings such as what goes around will come around, or, you know, what you sow, you're going to reap. And even karma is also another way to understand that no matter how you say it, humanity lives in an echo. And this is probably one of my favorite ways to explain karma, or what you sow and you reap, to the kids and teenagers that I counsel. You know, humanity lives in an echo, that what goes out from us, good or bad, positive or negative, will return to us, just like we hear the sound of our own voice echoing back in our ears when we are in a tunnel or a cave. And therefore, everything we think, say, and do all comes down to the fact that it's energy. And unless we transform the energy through healing our wounds, it's going to come back to us exactly how it went out from us. So how do we transform this negative energy? Well, it all begins with healing ourselves. And to take this concept, you know, to the heart of the matter, so to speak, the way we can find healing is to begin asking ourselves, who am I? Really? Who am I? You know, beneath all the external facades, beneath all of the pretense and outward appearances, who am I at my core? My teacher is often fond of saying that most people think that any undesirable situation is due to the behavior of others. In other words, they don't want to accept responsibility for their thoughts or words or actions. However, the perspective is the result of the mind's doing, which interprets everything that we take in through our five senses of sight, sound, smell, touch, and taste. And the mind takes it. And it is simply caused by the weakness or the mind that has not been transformed and the absorption of negative thoughts. So, for example, if you think that you are weak and you think that you're a victim, well, you're going to become weak and you're going to stay a victim. If you think that you're strong, then you are strong. But most people have accepted their inner weakness to the point that they are attached to them. And people don't want to come out of their self-created illusions. I mean, all the more reason why we have to be careful with our thoughts and our words and our deeds. Well, I was reminded of a published research article that I had read months and months and months ago, but I recently found it, and it's entitled Human Thoughts, A Form of Energy. And the author, the researcher, Ivan Domishev, if hopefully I pronounced it correctly, states that our thoughts can have a physical impact on our body. So, for example, they can affect our heart rate and blood pressure. We know this. Science has already proven this. And thoughts can also have a spiritual impact. For example, they can help us connect with our higher selves. And he goes on to cite other examples about our thoughts are energy. Again, science knows this. In fact, are you aware that a single thought can generate about 4 volts of energy, not to mention everything else our brain sends energy signals to? You know, 4 volts of energy per a single thought. Now, compare that to a AAA or a AA battery, which is, roughly speaking, 1.5 volts, okay? Now, when we speak our thoughts, that number jumps from 4 volts of energy to about 40 volts, or 10 times the amount. And again, let's put this into a perspective, that the amount of voltage required to start a car from its battery, it's somewhere 12.6, okay? So again, let's stay with the notion that our thoughts are energy. And if we take that single thought and we write it down on paper, the amount of energy jumps even higher, 50 times more. And the reason for this is because we have now engaged the head, the heart, and the hand. Or in other words, our thought, our word, our deed. And this is a significant amount of energy, which not only goes for negative thoughts, but also supports positive thoughts as well. And so the more we do this exercise and the more we journal, the more we write things out, even people who have hurt us, and we engage in an act of forgiveness through journaling and writing and writing and writing until the point of exhaustion, the more we do this, the more aware we're going to become of our thought patterns and our words and behaviors that are communicated in and through our relationships. And we'll also realize where our thoughts take us in any given moment on any given day. And maybe by looking at ourselves more closely and examining our motives, our assumptions, and even our limited perspectives, we just might realize the first step towards lasting transformation is to acknowledge the illusions of oppression and limited understanding that are all in our minds. Again, we take in information through our senses, the mind interprets. In other words, we might be in a physical prison, but if we find our true nature, if we have embraced our true nature, that we are an eternal soul, then no amount of earthly limitation can convince us that we're limited, or inadequate, or even restricted. My India friends understand that people are already in a relationship with all things and all people, which include God. But people just don't know it yet. And therefore, it's a matter of realizing that we are souls, and souls that are vast and formless. In fact, I've talked with my friends in India, and we've had some pretty interesting conversations about sin and ignorance. And whereas others see sin as people, you know, being bad or evil, they believe that people act out of ignorance of who they are, and therefore commit evil acts because they have yet to realize themselves and others as souls. Well, echoing this sentiment, one of my teachers, Joseph Rael, Beautiful Painted Arrow, in a recently published work entitled Becoming Medicine, Pathways of Initiation into Living Spiritually, he writes, "The way you become a medicine person is that you practice who you are, because you're already medicine. Nobody gives it to you. You are already it." And you know, what a gift to yourself and to your family and the world when you realize you're already medicine for others. We just have to work on clearing out everything that gets in the way of that medicine in terms of our unresolved emotional and psychological and physical and spiritual woundedness. I mean, we have to work on our relationships that have occurred in our past and the present. We have to work on resolving our differences, the pain, our bitterness, our egos, and our forgiveness. So in order for us to fully embrace ourselves as medicine for ourselves and medicine for others, we must first come to terms with everything that has brought us to this, even this very moment in our lives. In fact, there's so much more to us than what we have become so far. And that's what reclaiming authenticity is all about. Having the courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. And also having the courage to reclaim your awareness, your understanding of yourself as a soul. So how does your medicine come out from your thisness, your hachiatos? Well, if you're a plumber, how do you demonstrate your medicine, let's say, through your thisness? Or if you work in IT, how do you demonstrate your medicine of who you are through your thisness, your uniqueness? And if you're a singer, how do you demonstrate your medicine through your thisness, your uniqueness, your hachiatos? And herein lies a great lesson to be learned regarding recognizing who we are as souls. Because on this level, there are illusions and beliefs that have been superimposed that all we are is this particular body, with a set of feelings and thoughts and taking in the external world around us. And ours is a world whereby we are familiar with superimposed images all the time. And basically, to superimpose means to place or lay over or above something on another image. So photographers out there are familiar with this term, and they use this technique all the time to get the right effect. And in music recordings, it's often called overdubbing, which is also known as layering, which is a technique used in which audio tracks that have been pre-recorded are then played back and incorporated into another track. Just listen to some Beatles music and you'll get the idea. So when we believe that there is nothing more to us than this body or this mind, or that we define ourselves according to our wounds or scars and experiences, we're reinforcing this template, this distorted template, or the superimposition of this illusion. Now, removing this illusion and realizing the underlying reality is called the superimposition. And one of my favorite stories, which I've shared with you, the audience, is looking for the butter in every bowl of milk, which may seem like a strange title for the story, But when you think about it, every time you go to the grocery store, most people have on their list to buy things like milk and butter and cheese. And of course, there's other dairy products such as yogurt and cottage cheese and so forth. But have you ever stopped to take a closer look at a single glass of milk? And as you're looking at this glass of milk, are you able to see the butter and eventually the cheese that's already in it? It's true that butter and cheese do exist in milk. But where is it? Maybe presently we can't perceive it, but it's present everywhere in milk, in each and every drop of milk. I know there's no particle of milk where butter or ghee is not present. And this is a great analogy, I think, a great metaphor for how we are able to see God and the potential in ourselves and others in everyday life. Well, little did I realize after hearing that particular story for the first time, just how important it is to understand that the presence of God or the divine can be seen in everybody, especially ourselves in everyday life. Remember, look for the butter in the glass of milk. Look for the presence of God in yourself and one another. And on the surface, we might find this teaching difficult because, let's say, when we look at ourselves or when we look at others, all we might see is just so much physical pain or emotional wounds or psychological suffering or expressions of anger and violence or lust or jealousy or brokenness and so forth. But can we also see the potential for God's presence to transform these wounds into a life-giving means of creating the healing that we truly want to see and be in this world? Can we see the potential for the milk to be transformed into butter? Let alone, can we transform dimensions of higher spiritual awareness? I mean, do we see the potential in ourselves? Do we see ourselves as more than just the body? Do we see ourselves as souls which are limitless and vast? And how many times do we struggle with seeing God in this world because we're unwilling or unable to shift our focus? Or perhaps we're too busy to quiet ourselves to listen for God's still small voice. Or let's take this one step further. How many times do we wrongly assume that in order to see God, we have to first make God conform to our vision, our philosophy, our worldview, our prayers? In other words, if God really wants a relationship with me, then it's going to have to be on my terms. This is simply not the case. See, God's not akin to the genie in Aladdin's lamp. We don't obtain these things simply by rubbing the spiritual lamp, hoping to get three wishes. So, how do we see God more clearly, or love God more dearly, or follow God more nearly every day? Well, let me propose this idea. Perhaps before we ask the question, how, perhaps a better question would be for us to first understand from where inside the soul do these desires come. Perhaps the desire to see and love and follow God actually comes from a deep place in us that words can't express. Because you see, as we heal from our psychological and our emotional and physical and spiritual wounds, we start to look at ourselves and others differently. And this is a very good beginning. And yet, however, when we're able to see what we are truly are, that is light and soul, we begin to understand the true meaning of seeing the butter and cheese in a bowl of milk or the glass of milk. It may not be there at first glance, but as we develop our relationship with God or the divine, we heal from our woundedness. And here's the irony in all of this, that when we're able to truly see ourselves as soul, and ultimately when we are able to realize ourselves as souls, we begin to see others as soul, and we are no longer willing to accept relating to people as anything less than them also being souls. I mean, how many times do we hear and see people calling for an end to violence and crime and poverty? And interestingly, humanity has always struggled with these issues, but has often failed to look for the answers in the right places. I mean, all too often, the focus has been on the externals that have often caused such divisions in humanity since the beginning of measured time. And it is the externals that have produced these isms in the world today. Sexism, racism, ageism, classism, egoism, and so forth. But when we focus on the soul of a person, and we're able to recognize that, all of these isms fall away. They simply cannot follow the language of the soul, because the soul is always found by looking inward. There is no more sexism, no more racism, no more ageism, no more egoism. Isms do not have a voice in matters of the soul. And we are all beautiful souls made in the image of God, full of inherent value and dignity and worth. And yet, how many of us struggle to accept this truth because our attention is often diverted to focus solely on outward appearances and behaviors? So, in other words, we all live with some degree of ignorance of our soul consciousness. And we may get glimpses of it, but do we ever fully attain it? Because the physical, emotional, and psychological issues clouding our vision of who we truly are. And yes, diseases and illnesses do afflict us in the body. I get that. We do feel physical and emotional pain with so much intensity at times that we believe that they're going to break us in two. And at times, our lungs may struggle to take a single breath, or hunger and diseases cause our stomach and intestines and bones and muscles and blood to scream in agony. And these experiences might make us question whether or not we are the soul whom God has created. However, this illusion lies not in the suffering, pain, and agony we experience, but rather it's our perception that there is nothing more to us than an emotional, intellectual, and physical body. Well, indeed, the physical and emotional pain and suffering can temporarily drown out the cry of the soul, but the soul is never silenced. And furthermore, the truth is that the greatest strength of who we are as souls lies in our ability to transform and transcend the physical, emotional, and psychological limitations. For as much as history has shown us the horrific crimes humanity does to itself, there are just as many stories of people and humanity rising above such tragedies to heal and to reclaim their identity as soul. So long before anybody has ever heard us cry, we're heard by God, who is all ears for us. And long before any person spoke to us in this world, we were spoken to by the voice of eternal love. See, our preciousness, our uniqueness, and individuality are not given to us by those who meet us in, let's say, a brief chronological existence, but they're met by the one who has chosen us with an everlasting love. A love that existed from all eternity and is going to last through all eternity. So let me close tonight by just telling you just a real quick story of what does it look like when we see each other as soul? And what is this healing that takes place? There's actually a word for it, Ubuntu. It's a word in the African language. And here's a great example of Ubuntu in action. In certain regions of South Africa, when someone does something wrong, he is taken to the center of the village, and he's surrounded by his tribe, his family, for 2 days. And during those 2 days, they will speak all of the good he has done. Because you see, they believe that each person is good, yet sometimes we make mistakes, which is really a cry for help. They unite in this ritual to encourage the person to reconnect with his true nature. And the belief is that unity and affirmation have more power to change human behavior than shame and punishment. And this is known as Ubuntu, humanity towards others. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you for sharing this time with me this past hour. And if you do have any questions or just want to drop me a line, please visit the website www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity and drop me a line. So until next time, I just want to encourage you to live out yourself as an understanding of a soul. And remember the story of Ubuntu and remind one another, remind yourself of all the goodness of who you are. Take care and God bless.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.